And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, November 27, 2023. South Sudan's Minister of Finance plans to cut down the size of government delegation on international trips.
Anything that is outside the budget will not be funded. And if we give you money, we will follow you to make sure that you have spent the money exactly in the specified objective.
And an activist in Yei County is calling on officials at the Ministry of Education to investigate the leaking of exam papers.
They were shared copies of these examination papers prior to the exams, and where there are confirmations that exactly the questions that came in the examination papers were the questions that were shared earlier.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Minister of Finance says the government is spending huge amount of money on international travels with exaggerated per diem rates. But Barnaba Chol says his ministry is going to cut international travels by reducing the number of officials and amount spent on such trips. A Juba-based analyst says the minister is doing the right thing, but he might not last long in his position. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer reports from Juba.
South Sudan's finance minister, Bak Barnaba Chol, said some unnamed officials sometimes force his ministry to pay for financial claims that are not in the approved national budget.
Anything that is outside the budget will not be funded. And if we give you money, we will follow you to make sure that you have spent the money exactly in the specified objective. Otherwise, the Auditor General will also be allowed to do its work, so that we make sure those institutions that don't adhere to the rules of the budget and the ceiling allocation are punished by the law.
The finance minister says his office makes a majority of payments in cash. He says the ministry will formalize transactions and records by making payments through checks or direct transfers to bank accounts. Chol adds that the government spends a lot of money on foreign trips by officials. He says as part of economic reform agenda, he's cutting down on government spending to save some money.
For instance, when a government delegation travel abroad, there is a per diem structure that everybody must adhere to. In my few months in the office, I have seen some institution stepping that mandate or structure. People who are going for a trip in Uganda, a very important government mission, of course, that we must facilitate, but with exaggerated numbers. Someone going very venomous to Uganda, maybe three people. You go there 150,000. Lamantugulu, go back and look at the per diem structure approved by the legislature. He insists or she insists that you must pay. If you say, no, I don't have money, then they say, this minister, he's a bad person. He must go.
Chol says unnecessary travels abroad and multiple tax exemptions should be discouraged to help the country's ailing economy recover. He also says the Minister of Finance is overstaffed with redundant employees who need to be removed from the payroll. Abraham Kwalnyuan, a professor of politics and economics at the University of Juba, says the finance minister has made the right decision, but adds that he doubts whether the minister will implement the reforms he wants to introduce.
You know, people who are always doing things for the public in our current system are not the people that are well loved by other people. So the chances of him succeeding are going to be very limited. One, if they don't remove him, then the next thing that they're going to do is to sabotage him. So it is not going to be a walk on the highway, but the minister should be able to understand that he has taken the right path and it is not going to be an easy fight.
The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan has repeatedly urged the South Sudan government to be transparent about the use of public funds. Ambassador Michael Aidela said on several occasions that the transitional government of national unity should use the oil revenue for services across the country. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
A spokesperson for refugees and displaced people in Darfur describes the current humanitarian conditions in the area as dire due to intense fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Adam Rijal says internally displaced persons need essential items such as food, medicine and clothing. He calls on the rival groups to cease fire and allow aid organizations to assist those affected by Sudan's seven-month-long conflict. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Weeks of intense fighting in Darfur have left civilians in dire conditions, with key infrastructure destroyed and humanitarian assistance disrupted. Rijal highlights the challenging situation for thousands of refugees and internally displaced persons in camps across the region.
The humanitarian and health situation in the Darfur region of Western Sudan, especially in displacement and refugee camps, has reached a critical stage and has become catastrophic. Citizens are living in extreme suffering with no one to turn to, and the war-affected victims are in urgent need of activating protection mechanisms and finding alternative ways to deliver essential humanitarian aid, including food and medical assistance. They require urgent relief and basic services such as food, medicine, shelter, after more than 7 months of senseless war.
He points out that widespread insecurity prevents displaced persons from leaving the camps, adding that the reduction in food assistance leaves families without support.
It is worth mentioning that the displaced individuals in the camps who relied on the World Food Program for the distribution of food rations have reached the eighth month without receiving any food. There are no alternative initiatives to meet their needs, given the scarcity of essential food items, which have skyrocketed in prices in the markets. Additionally, the agricultural season's failure indicates an imminent famine. This poses a significant challenge for the community as a whole.
Rijal says the situation has led to the outbreak of diseases and numerous cases of malnutrition among children, pregnant women, and the elderly.
Currently, there are emerging cases of diarrhea, respiratory infections, malaria, malnutrition, and the lack of life-saving medications in the camps and war-affected areas.
He urges Sudan's rival groups to put a halt to the fighting and facilitate the delivery of life-saving assistance to people trapped in displacement camps. He also calls on individuals, organizations, and the international community to provide essential items such as food, medicine, and clothing to the displaced in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Ye in Central Equatorial State, where an activist is calling on the National Ministry of Education to hold officials preparing exams accountable after national examination papers for grade 8 were leaked on social media. Justuson Yosa says education officials are responsible for exams and should explain how the papers were leaked before students could even write the exams.
They were shared copies of these examination papers prior to the exams, and where there are confirmations that exactly the questions that came in the examination papers were the questions that were shared earlier. So today, early in the morning, the county education director was shared also similar, the same paper for mathematics paper for today. The questions circulating were the questions that also appeared. This approves that this examination is leaked.
Tell us the number of subjects that were leaked before the students wrote the papers.
Yesterday it was a science paper. Today it is mathematics paper. So if the science paper has been in circulation, and then the mathematics paper has been in circulation, so there is possibility that the first paper, which was CRE, the other paper, which was social studies and English, smugglers need to be investigated. It's very hard to confirm that these papers were not leaked.
You made your concerns to education officials in Juba or in Yei about these leakages.
I strongly believe that the commissioner for Yei River County should be having information about this very issue. I strongly believe that the supervisor who made his statement on the first issue raised should be having information about this issue. I believe that the county education director for Yei River County should be having information on this very issue. I believe that the National Security Department should be having information on this particular issue.
Are you talking about schools in Yei writing final exams, or it's widespread across South Korea?
This cannot just be for Yei, for example. If exams are being sent on WhatsApp, this WhatsApp does, is not only for Yei. And where could these messages be coming from? They could be coming from Juba, and this calls for thorough investigation.
And you're talking about thorough investigation. What are you doing as an activist to hold the authorities to account on this matter?
I would like to remind our authorities that we should follow the law. We should investigate these people, the flow of these papers, the movement of these papers, and then we should be able to account. We should be able to make these people to account. These culprits must be punished. They must be answerable to the law. We should not compromise with the future. We rather choose practicing integrity over these practices of corruption. So I'm therefore asking the National Parliament to summon the National Minister of Education and Instruction. I'm appealing for the National Parliament to summon the Secretary General for the National Examination Council to be able to answer questions as to the internal practices of exams.
It appears like you know the institutions that are charged with ensuring the security of these examination papers.
Yes, as I'm speaking to you right now, I have had a meeting with the national director in Yei. I had a conversation with him within this very case. And as always, investigation is a process. I believe that they should be working on this very case. So I'm therefore asking them, if they have started working on this case, I'm asking them to continue with the investigations. They should investigate even the flow, the circulation of these papers in the country, so that they can be able to identify those people who have leaked these exams and exactly how these exams came out.
That's Justice Victor Yosa, an activist in Yei Town. He spoke with me from Yei via WhatsApp on Friday. South Sudan in Focus reached out to education officials in Juba for comments, but they promised to speak to this program on Tuesday. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the United Nations is working with schools to reach children or to teach children on how to use latest technology for education. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
Oh, first of all, change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Around the world, people are marking the United Nations 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Help us mark the work to end violence against women by sharing your thoughts on VOA's English to Africa radio programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076, before December 10th. Tell us what is being done in your community to fight gender-based violence and tell us why this issue is important to you. That number again is +1 202 258 3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Malawian government has partnered with the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, and the mobile service provider to help students in rural Malawi learn how to use the latest digital technology. Through the Connect a School project, public schools are equipped with high-definition smart TV, tablets, and free internet connectivity to promote digital learning among students. However, some schools say a shortage of some gadgets presents a challenge. Lamek Masina reports from the Central District of Malawi.
Learners at Lintipe Secondary School in central Malawi are among thousands in 9 schools across the country selected as the first beneficiaries of a 5-year project to help students learn the latest digital technology. Here, the children feel transformed just 3 months into the project. Joanna Genesis is a student at Lintipe Secondary School in Malawi.
At first, I didn't know how to use a gadget, but now I am now able to use the gadget. Even our teacher can teach us how to make things. We cannot agree that it's true because we don't know how to make it. But when we see it using the gadgets, we are able and truly understand the meaning of making things.
Government statistics show that 4% of 15 to 24-year-olds in Malawi have skills in information and communication technologies. This is largely because of the high cost of buying internet data and lack of access to resources for digital education. So partners in the Connect a School project, the Malawi government, UNICEF, and the mobile phone network provider Airtel Malawi are trying to address that gap by equipping each school with a smart TV, tablets, and free internet connectivity. Nora Chavula Chirwa with Airtel Malawi says the company is providing schools with free internet access and that the new apps are helping to make up for a lack of resources at some schools.
I mean, where there's a hindrance or an obstacle of not having a physical lab, now the students are able to actually run experiments, run physics experiments using the MyLab app that the Ministry of Education has facilitated that these tablets should have.
MyLab is a visual science lab application developed by students at Nzuzu University in northern Malawi. Some school officials say more tablets are needed for the project. Nova Kantuzi is the head teacher at Lintipe Secondary School.
The total enrollment of the school is 350 students. But the gadgets, the tablets are only 20, which means one is for the teacher and the 19 are for the students. And now how effective can we use these gadgets with the students?
Malawi government authorities say they are trying to get more tablets. Chomora Mikeka is the Director of Science, Technology and Innovation in Malawi's Ministry of Education.
Right now, as I'm speaking, there's a procurement process taking place to buy devices to run MyLab in selected schools, and this will be glowing.
In the meantime, Mikeka says the government has signed a letter of intent with the International Telecommunications Union, UNICEF, and the Giga Initiative to provide digital resources to over 8,000 public schools in Malawi by 2030. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lidza District, Malawi.
From Malawi, we move to Sierra Leone, where a leading human rights defender says President Mada Bio's speech to the nation appears to have calmed the situation following the military barracks attack by gunmen on Sunday. Abdul Fatuma is the executive director for the group called Campaign for Human Rights and Development. He reports that the government says investigators are going to arrest all those involved. His remarks comes after President Bio announced the arrest of most of the attackers who carried out the assault on the country's main military base and prisons. The military barracks is close to the presidential lodge and the office of the vice president. For latest development and analysis, Peter Cloti reached out to Abdul Fatuma in the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown.
This morning, the government put out a statement readjusting the curfew order. Now, curfew start at 6 a.m. and end at 9 p.m. So, meaning citizens have right to be out within 6 a.m. in the morning, and by 9 p.m. at night, you should be indoors. The Minister of Information says that the security will continue to do their operations until they are fully in control. Then they will return life to normalcy back.
Did the president's speech last night, calling on political leaders, religious groups, civil society, to unite as a country against what he called attempt to destabilize the peace, calmed nerves in Sierra Leone?
Yes, the president actually emphasizing and stressing the victory by pushing these people out of the city and opening the country back today. He crowned it to all Sierra Leoneans that we have, claimed victory over those who attempt to attack our democracy and, put this country under instability. And then calling on civil society, religious leaders, political leaders, to come on board to fight against these enemies that want to bring instability to our country. So that helps to calm down a lot of nerves, and there's a little bit of changes in the tonation of government this time around than the previous protest or alleged coup by them. Because by them, he was saying that they know the people, they will go after them, they will hit them harder, and they know exactly it's coming from a group of politicians. But this time around, he's not blaming a group of political activists or a group of political groups at this moment. He's only calling on the nation and stakeholders to come on board to fight against these people.
Well, there are suggestions. Last year during the protest, the government called it an attempt to overthrow the administration. But this time around, an attack was carried out, the prisoners released. The attack occurred at the military installation where the attackers allegedly took weapons, and the attack basically happened close to the presidential lodge, where the vice president's residence was also nearby with other diplomatic missions. Why are they not calling it an attempted coup this time? What is the analysis here? Talk to me about it.
That's the confusion among citizens here and analysts and political analysts and international, security experts in Sierra Leone. Because the Amourage was the attack, and then ammunitions were taken away, and vehicles, military vehicles, and they used those ammunitions also to break the prison and release prisoners, both from the female correctional center and also the male correctional center. And by then, government already has imposed a curfew order, that we should not have people outside moving around. But the released prisoners were out working, peacefully with no interruption, going to their, different destinations. And then, this very area, it's very close to the World Bank headquarters in Sierra Leone, the British High Commission, the Vice President Office, as you rightly said, and very close to the Presidential Lodge and that of the U.S. Embassy as well. So, it's scary to see that a group of people attack the military barracks and took away arms and ammunition and used those arms, ammunition and military vehicles to cause more havoc, you know, across the city. And also adopted police personnel.
That's Abdul Fatuma, the executive director for the group known as Human Rights and Human Rights for Development. He spoke with Peter Clody from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. That's all we prepared for you this Monday, November 27, 2023. We now leave you with Kasang Dedi and Victoria Ole and their song, Salam Ya Sudan. We've been listening to Kasang Dedi and Victoria Ole and their song, Salam Ya Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adris Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Biden administration has decided to extend by 120 days a sanctions waiver that allows Iraq to pay for the much-needed fuel it has received from Iran without running afoul of U.S. sanctions. The waiver permits Iraq to deposit payments into non-Iraqi banks with restricted accounts, accessible to Iran for spending only on humanitarian goods. An estimated $10 billion has been built up in Iraqi escrow accounts for the Iranian gas. And Iran has responded to lack of payment by periodically cutting gas supplies to Iraq. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller noted that there are 20 U.S. sanctions waivers dealing with payment by Iraq for Iranian fuel imports and that they were initiated under the previous U.S. administration. The waivers are consistent, he said, with the U.S. goals of reducing Iran's leverage over Iraq and of ultimately weaning Iraq from dependence on Iranian fuel. Also, and importantly, spokesperson Miller said, allowing Iran to access funds for the purpose of buying food and medicine is a good thing for the Iranian people, with whom we have no quarrel.
Our quarrels with the Iranian regime, its destabilizing activities. What we see is an Iranian regime that, whether these waivers are issued or not, whether their people benefit from these monies or not, continues to fund hostile activities. That has not changed. It has not changed going back years. It has done that first and foremost. It's one of its top priorities. It does that whether it receives, whether its people receive humanitarian benefits or not.
Regarding Iran's malign activities, spokesperson Miller said, the United States will continue to hold the Iranian government accountable. National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications John Kirby underscored U.S. resolve. We have added force posture to the region. We have sanctioned in 2.5 years some 400 entities, 300 in just the last year alone, for all manner of Iranian destabilizing behavior, the way they're treating their protesters, the way they're supporting Russia, and the way they're threatening maritime shipping in the Gulf region, he said. Nobody is turning a blind eye to Iran's destabilizing activities, declared Mr. Kirby. We're going to continue to keep the pressure on them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.